Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are in the throes now of content. We've kind of wrapped up on some marketing. The Biden administration is going to continue to create a financial burden to make you overwhelmed, that when we all of a sudden collapse and the offer is on the table, that they're going to make that kind of just go away, but we're going to lose our liberties and our Constitution. Don't you buy it. Do not believe that we are burdened by unconstitutional government. We're not. As a matter of fact, every single person that is involved in this facade, going all the way back to the beginning to Wilson and so forth, if it makes you feel better, burn them up, dig them up and burn them in effigy, if that's what makes you feel better. But we're not accountable to fraudulent debt. You're not accountable to the sins of the world. We're only accountable for our own sins, and our government can only do certain things that we've delegated powers to them, and those powers are enumerated in that Constitution. So what does that mean? If they're doing things that they have no authority or power to do, then who's responsible for it? Is it we the people? Well, actually, if they're taking debt, the parties that are responsible for that debt are the culprits, the criminals who are frauding in the name of the United States, trying to create fraud upon the United States. And those who are aiding and abetting are the accessories to that fraud, China and the rest of the countries of the world. They've got us all believing that they can do this. They got us all believing that they can create this debt. And they can't. Well, they're doing it. And they're actually exchanging money and giving it to us to bind us and enslave us to debt. It is another addiction that we have to deal with. As I was kind of going into a couple days ago, you know, we all have these addictions. We all have these problems. As a matter of fact, before I even get into that, let me just get through these first obligatories. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions to what and what we've got, where we've been, where we're going, and what we have to do. Our comment line, 425-270-5416. And please, please, I beg you, get involved in the solution. And one great way of doing that is getting other people to come to the content, to come to learning and come to understanding the Constitution, what we have, where we're going, and what we have to do. Now, on to this comment that I was going to make. Everybody I know has problems. We've all sinned. We've all been compromised one way or another. But the fact of the matter is, if you've gotten yourself into a situation, because I've had plenty of people come up to me and say, I really want to help, and I'm going to help you in the sidelines, but I can't lead. And these guys are leaders. They were leaders when they were doing bad things, but they can't lead anymore because they don't want that to shine or have a negative shine upon them. Now, let me ask you this. When Christ chose the apostles to serve, did he consider, you know, the shame that they would bear, such as the tax man? I mean, he was really considered a bad guy, because he was selling out his own people and doing the work of Rome. And so, you know, here's a guy that was compromised, but he then turned his life around and, you know, walked away from that. Is it possible for a compromised person to kind of walk away from that? Well, first off, they have to literally walk away from what they're doing. And then secondly, they just have to not turn back and do that. And they have to stay on the straight and narrow. But every one of us has to stay on the straight and narrow, and every one of us is fighting to do that. Well, why is it that we want to, you know, take a scorched earth attitude towards any of these people who are out there that are really trying to do something good, and then when something bad comes up in their past, you know, we forgave Bill Clinton for smoking pot, but we can't forgive each other for, you know, doing, you know, for committing a sin or whatever that problem is. Who is it among us? Remember when I believe it was the adulterer that they brought before Jesus, and they basically was getting ready to stone her. And Christ said, those of you without sin, cast the first stone, and left it with that. And then after time, after everybody left, you know, Christ kind of pointed out, where are thy accusers? The fact of the matter is that, you know, she had committed what in the old book was a stoning offense. I mean, death. She was to be put to death by the old book. And Christ had changed that to where now we can be forgiven. We can actually continue to live and go and sin no more and cleanse ourselves as if those stains of crimson blood are no more. And so, friends, we got to quit being so hard on each other, and we've got to quit attacking, and we have to start being quick to forgive. Wouldn't you want to be forgiven for your indiscretions? Well, why wouldn't you want to forgive others as quickly as you would want to be forgiven of yours? You know, this kind of goes back to, you know, that movie I suffered through was, I think it was Runaway Bride, when Julia Roberts was being excoriated by her family and friends for all of the many times that she ran away from her suitors and how they belittled her and so forth. And Richard Gere, you know, kind of pointed out that, you know, who considers this, you know, anything of, you know, good report? Who would want to be, you know, dragged through their life's bad choices? And, you know, who are they to create the judgment seat for this point in time for this person? And so, anyway, and even though she had a problem and she did it again, the fact of the matter is that we have to be on the high road. We need to stay on that high road, you know, and there's times we get down off that high road, you know, and we got to do what it takes to get back up there. Sometimes we may have to apologize. We may have to make amends, but we need to be there. And I need you to be there. I know there's compromised people everywhere, but we need everybody in this fight. Do not think you can't lead. Do not think you can't serve, regardless of the baggage you're bringing. Regardless. If those things are behind you and you're committed to doing and moving forward on that path, then by all means, start moving forward. Because that's what we need. We need people engaged. Because if perfection was required to save this country, we are lost. Because there can be no perfection until Christ comes. I mean, if you really understand the magnitude of what we're talking about, nobody is perfect. Nobody can be, at least at this point in time. Certain things have to happen first. And so, sorry, we can't get there. But we can get there. And we don't have to be perfect. We just have to try. Now, the other thing I wanted to point out is, because I want to start moving this forward, I want to start carrying this into the next election. We got less than a year now into going into the next election. And so what we need to do is we need to get you to start considering your contributions. We need you. Are you in a blue state? We need you to contribute to red state elections. We need you to reach across and help some of these people that are challenging rhinos, are fighting for, you know, their lives in leading on this cause. We need to make sure that we get the champions in these dark red states elected. So what we need is we need everyone to make, you know, until we can get to this, just so you understand, what we're going to be doing in the campaign strategy is we're going to be crying for getting the states to make all elections local. In other words, keeping Soros, the world, and anybody that is outside your area of responsibility in that election. In other words, if it's a city election, nobody can donate, nobody can bring money, nobody can come in and financially support any campaigns, advertisements, PACs, anything. PACs can't do it anymore. That PAC has to be a city PAC, and every dollar that goes into that PAC has to come from either the people living in that city, and they have to prove this, that this was their money, not something that was just basically handed to them, deposited, and then thrown in, not money laundered, but actual money within the city. We got to take back our elections and make them local. And this is how we do it. I don't know why this is so difficult in campaign finance reform. People talk about, well, we need real campaign finance reform, but they're not instituting it. They're not really going for it. They're just going after these corporations or those corporations. Are you kidding me? All elections must be local. And anyway, until we get there, we need your help. And I'll finish this thought when we come back from these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so right now, Soros and his league of evildoers are doing everything they can to influence elections in buying and getting attorney generals to basically turn their backs on the laws to help actually get criminals out of jail, not to prosecute murderers and violent criminals, to create an element of fear in our communities. Basically, when we have lived for so long with the protection of government, where we have not been the ones engaged in protecting ourselves, we're not used to defending ourselves, then we become cowards and a cowardly society. And so the best way to get people to surrender their liberty is to get them in fear and get them afraid to be able to do anything so that they go, well, whatever it takes, just, you know, start doing things so that we're protected. Because that's desperation will cause those types of fatal mistakes. So what we have to do is we have to counter. You have to understand we need every contribution. So figure out, I know everything is tight for everybody, but figure out how you can save a half a gallon of gas, whether it's $1 a week, $2 a week. And I know it's going to create a nice little pot, a little, you know, shoot. You know, if you look at 52 weeks and it's $1 a week and you're, and money is that tight, $52 sitting in a jar in a year from now when we need money to go into a Wyoming election or a South Dakota primary, well, you know, the temptation is going to be there to say, you know, gosh, this could help, you know, put some a meal on the table. It requires discipline. We have to have that discipline. Now, if your money is that tight and you know, don't want to necessarily spend that money, you can actually donate that money to me in our FundMe. We have a FundMe account. And all of that money, and what I'll do is, because every dollar that I've received in that has gone into the 90-some dollars, I think, that I got out of that. We spent last year in printing $300 worth, so I spent most of the money out of my pocket to get these postcards done for Wyoming to put out during the county fairs and so forth. And so, you know, when we get money, we actually use that on things that help promote the word, the cause, or what have you. We've got brochures now that we're actually going to start putting up in PDF so that you can print them up and actually fold them, and you can start going to your own, you know, city hall meetings, county meetings, what have you, with Reclaiming the Republic brochures, and actually fold them up and boom, hand them over and say, here you go, folks. If you want to understand what the problem is or how you can be a part of the solution, here you go. And so, because these brochures are designed to challenge people, just like my books are designed to challenge paradigms, to get you to actually no longer just accept your biases and challenge them and look at all the other data to say, are you really right? Do you really know what you're talking about? Because most people have lived in a vacuum and they have surrounded themselves with all the information that agrees with their comfort level. And that's the dumbest thing a person can do. It's like having all of your friends agree with you. Do you really want yes-a-fans? Do you really want sycophants, I mean? Do you want yes-men and sycophants to surround you to make you feel better about your decisions? Well, no. As a matter of fact, you want to have those who constantly challenge you and are constantly, you know, calling you out. You know, you want to have them around. I mean, they may be a pain in the neck, but at least they're making you be a better person, okay? So, until we can make all elections local elections, then we need your help. So, if you want to contribute on a regular basis, that money that you contribute, I will let you know where that money went. I will let you know next year, because I will take that money and I will donate that money to this campaign, this campaign, this campaign, this campaign, based on the, you know, the pressures or who we're challenging, because there are certain rhinos in Wyoming. There are certain, and our focus is Wyoming because it seems like we have the best footing in Wyoming and we have real movement in Wyoming. And so, more and more people are starting to wake up because the message started in 2018 in Wyoming. So we're going on 4 years. So anyway, what we want to do is we want to make sure that, you know, we utilize that money. So if it's easier for you to just donate, you know, $1 a week, if it's easier for you to donate, you know, $2 or whatever, to put it into our GoFundMe account, which is out there, Reclaiming the Republic is still out there. then, and if you need to know where it is, let me know. And then you can just basically make these small little contributions. That way you don't get tempted around Christmas time to, you know, get consumed in getting, you know, some material gift for somebody. If you really want a significant Christmas gift, give of yourself, give of your spirit, and contribute to the spirit of others. And 9 times out of 10, money can't get you there. Now, anywho, what we want to do is we want to actually help make a real impact in this upcoming election. And I'm telling you, the blue states can't make an impact. There ain't no coming back in those blue states. The corruption and the swamp has created the levees to contain their water and their bacteria and their disease so that they continue to fester and grow. So what we have to do is we actually have to take those non-swamp states, and they will save us. We have enough of them. They will save us. So anyway, what I want to do is I want to kind of quickly just go through, because I actually looked at the dates, because actually, you know, we're talking about some of these documents and some of these events were literally like within a month or two of each other. And so the chronological order of the content we're going to cover now will be the Assumption Act first. Then we're going to cover the cod fishery bounties. Then we'll cover Madison's essay on property. And then, of course, I knew the Whiskey Rebellion. That's what we'll cover last. And so as we do these, this is kind of helping set the stage of, you know, okay, they just cracked the seal, or they just turned the engine on this brand new motor called the federal government and this constitutional republic. And they're driving it around the country. And as a matter of fact, Washington, if I remember correctly, Washington went on a nationwide tour to basically greet all of the people of the different states, you know. And so when he came back from his tour, you know, they got, you know, kind of down to business. Not that they didn't get down to business first, but one of the first orders of business was for him to go around and actually, you know, congratulate and enjoin each state into the union. And so it's kind of significant, and it's kind of interesting how and the ways they went about what they did. But what we're building up to are the resolutions, because it didn't take long for the federal government, with the avarice of power, with the greed of control, the federal government and those politicians who were sitting at power, seeing how people were being tossed to and fro, you know, losing their seat and so forth, they wanted to make sure that they could maintain their seat. And so they passed the Alien and Sedition Acts. And in so doing, they opened up, or they got basically Madison and Jefferson to open up a can of whoop butt. And anyway, we will be moving into the what we call the Assumption Acts. Now, what I'm going to give you is I'm actually going to give you the citation of Madison's comments in Congress regarding the Assumption Act. But just so you understand, there were these different resolutions that were a part of this act. The 7th resolution was the resolution in question in the acts, or these resolutions that were approved and amended on the 21st of April, and this was in 1790. In other words, 1789 is when they first formed. They were just wrapping up their first session, and they were moving in towards the second session. And so, because if I remember correctly, I think the session started back in May. This may have been the beginning of the second session. I'd actually have to go back and look at the books. And you can find this stuff at the Library of Congress. But it's not easy to find. They don't want you to necessarily find all of this stuff, because when you can start putting the pieces together, then you can start figuring out what's going on and what's wrong with, you know, our government and so forth. Anyway, The seventh resolution, quote, states that immediate provision ought to be made for the present debt of the United States, and that the faith of government ought to be pledged to make provision at their next session for so much of the debts of the respective states as shall have been subscribed upon them of the terms expressed in the last resolution, close quote. Now, this was what was basically, you know, bringing in the debts of the states who failed to pay their debt of the war debts and to Continental Congress. And so there were some of these states that didn't do anything and, you know, basically had this debt looming over their head. Now they had the federal government as well. And instead of, you know, actually working off, you know, this is how people get into trouble. Please remove this burden from me. You know, you see this in the Bible. You see this in Aesop's fables and those types of things where people, you know, all of a sudden they realize that they have to pay the piper. They go, oh, please, it's crushing me. We'll be right back after these two promos to carry out this thought. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so just as we were going into break, I was pointing out that, you know, every time somebody all of a sudden has the piper come, you got to pay the bill. People will do anything and everything they can if they believe that there's a possibility that they can have that debt forgiven them so that they don't have to, you know, pay that debt, then they will do that. And it's really sad to see, you know, that that's a common ploy or common nature of people. I mean, I think it's one of the flaws that we have, because the true character of the honest person, the high road, person on the high road, is this is a legitimate debt. I owe this debt, and I can't pay this debt, so I will go to debt prison. I'll work this debt off. That's what I have to do. And that's what they would do. The Bible has plenty of stories of the debt and the debtor and so forth. But here's the interesting thing. The northern states were the states, supposedly the holier-than-thou states, the abolition states, right? They didn't have slave labor to constantly produce agrarian products. And you have to understand the difference between, you know, manufacturing and agrarian. Agrarian, it is pretty much a constant or a consistent business. The only thing that really challenges your production in agriculture is the weather, right? So in other words, if the weather is going to be non-conducive, you know, like if a drought like what we've got going on right now, this man-made drought from those, you know, chem spraying or the, you know, chemtrails that they're putting up. And believe me, if you don't think that those contrails that people are telling you are up in the air are, you know, anything other than contrails, then you've been duped into believing the big lie. Because a contrail, go to a air show where the Blue Angels are out and they're playing around in the air, because, or even the Thunderbirds or whoever, and you will actually see contrails being created where they actually inject water into the turbines of the engine and it spews out these contrails. Watch how long those contrails stay. You'll even notice that sometimes they'll even change the color. Wow, how does the color change of a contrail? Oh, they must be injecting something into that contrail. Okay, so go count how long that contrail stays in the atmosphere, visible in the atmosphere. And you're going to find that, oh, wow, it kind of dissipates pretty quickly. It doesn't stay up there for hours and hours and all day and turn into clouds. What it does do is it actually dissipates rather quickly. And as a matter of fact, isn't it interesting how a jet would be flying along and no contrail, and all of a sudden a contrail. And then all of a sudden that contrail stops. What happened? Was there something in the physics of the atmosphere, in the physics of science, that absolutely changed in the atmosphere where contrails all of a sudden just miraculously occurred and then stopped? And then those contrails, defying physics still, maintain themselves and actually turn into clouds. Come on. Are you that stupid? Look up, take some observation, use a little bit of scientific training, you know, the scientific process of a hypothesis. Look up, you know, study it and look at the behavior, take note, and then you can start actually comparing what is a contrail and what is a chemtrail. Because I'm telling you that they are spraying crap up there. But anyway, I forgive me for going down that path, but the fact of the matter is that when we look at the Assumption Acts, getting back to these Assumption Acts and the behavior of people, it was very clear that people wanted to have their bread buttered on both sides. I mean, hey, double the butter, that's good for me. I like butter. It's like, you know, can I have a second scoop of ice cream? We all like dessert. We all like rewards. But the fact of the matter is, those are the things that, you know, can spoil us, and those are the things that can pervert us. And what ended up happening with these Assumption Acts and the pursuing of this Assumption Act, the northern states who were manufacturers, they actually, you know, had to buy goods. I mean, they were a more volatile business at the time, and so they didn't have the ability. And if you understand the trade that they were undergoing at the time, because we had just gotten out of war with Britain. Britain was basically seizing their produced goods and so forth. So they were having a tough time. The northern states were having a tough time. But hey, guess what? Crops were growing every year down in the south, and that was helping them pay their debt. And so the southern members and Scott, Representative Scott of Pennsylvania, spoke out in Congress against the motion, saying, hey, we shouldn't be doing this. Wadsworth, Sherman's Connecticut colleague, declared that there was no, if there was no assumption, because you got to remember, these guys are from Connecticut, right? And Connecticut is a northern state that didn't have the ability to necessarily pay these debts, or, you know, they just didn't have the fortitude, the commitment in saying we've got to pay our debt. If it takes us a little austerity, we have to pay our debt, because those were legitimate debts that they went into. Unlike our debt, the national debt, that is an illegitimate debt. Anyway, quote, this is what he said, quote, there will be a general clamor through all the eastern states against the national government, close quote. So in other words, they were already threatening harmony in the very first session of Congress if they don't pay, if they don't get the federal government to pay their debt. Well, there's a problem with that, and this is why Madison really goes into a very long discourse, because everybody there in Congress is kind of new to this thing called the Constitution. Not many people that were there really understood this, nor did they take the necessary measure in understanding how the Constitution was described and defined in the ratification debates. People just thought that that was an interesting discussion. They were going to go move on. How many times when you sit down and hammer out an agreement or basically work out a fundamental contract, but it's really informal, and you say, you're going to do this and you're going to do this, and you get that person to do this first, you know, like they're going to come in and paint for you, and then you're going to stiff them because you've been able to give them the ambiguity so that when they come back and say, well, you know, okay, I've done all of this stuff. Now, what are you going to do for me? Because you said you'd do this, this, and this. And you say, well, you didn't do this the way I wanted, and I'm not going to. And that's how contracts go awry. And so people didn't understand. They didn't follow. The reason we got in trouble in the very beginning is that they didn't take those ratification debates and they didn't codify that Constitution in providing the direct clarification, in taking it away from the court to say there's no interpretation when it comes to the Necessary and Proper Clause. There is no interpretation when it comes to the Supremacy Clause. There is no interpretation by the court when it comes to the Commerce Clause or the General Defense and Welfare Clause, or on and on and on and on, because they clearly defined and delineated all of that. Had they done that, then it would have been much harder, not that they wouldn't have tried, but it would have been much harder for them to get away. And I'm telling you, we would not be dealing with such an out-of-control government today. Every time a new state would come into the Union, the states that were the original 13 should have printed out their ratification debates, handed them to the new government, this new Congress or this new state legislature, to say, here you go. This is how we all agreed that the Constitution was to be defined. You need to understand this because you need to help defend the Constitution as defined, because the federal government has been trying and trying and trying to aggrandize their power, and they can't. The contract is clear. We don't have to let them, and we can't let them, because if we do, we will rue the day. Anyway, so Madison now gets up as they're discussing this in April 1790, and he says, it is not without much reluctance that I trouble the committee with an observation on a subject which has been so long under discussion and may be thought to be entirely exhausted. I must refer to my apology to the uncommon preservance with which the advocates for an assumption adhere to their object, notwithstanding the difficulty which oppose it. On the supposition that the measure in question were ever so eligible, if it could be so modified so as to be acceptable to the general sense of the government and of its constituents at large, every member ought to think to be struck with the impropriety of pressing a matter of such peculiar importance and delicacy by a bare majority. In other words, this shouldn't be something that just is passed by 50%, you know, because that we're going down this path of mob rule, and Tytler's cycle of democracy and how it destroys good government. So anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so one of the things you're going to realize that kind of comes out right here in Madison's comments is basically they've been talking about this assumption for a while. Hamilton, right out the gate, started kind of pounding this implied power. Well, since the federal government has the ability to, you know, control the good faith and credit of the United States, that means it can start bringing in, you know, your debt and your debt, you know, barring this problem in the Constitution called the Uniformity Clause. I've said this before when we went through the ratification debates. The federal government cannot treat one state differently than another. And Madison will get into this. But here's the thing. They've been arguing this and arguing this and arguing this, trying to find a way to create a win for the states, more specifically Hamilton states, the northeastern states, so that they become or obtain an advantage. Because what great advantage is it for those people who have worked off their student loans and those people who have done nothing to pay off their student loans for the government to come along and pay off their student loans? Oh, wow. It is creating an unfair advantage. The federal government has no authority to be able to create winners and losers. You go into an obligation, your obligation is equal to everybody. If those obligations were fulfilled, and even if you have extenuating circumstances, then maybe the court will give you a stay and allow you to delay that. But bottom line, that debt, that student debt, carries with you to your death. It's kind of interesting. That's one of the few debts that you can't get out from underneath of. Why is it that they instituted it that way? Because they didn't want people. Why was it that student debt was so peculiar that you couldn't even claim bankruptcy over? Because they wanted to make sure that people
recognized that they had an obligation to the American people, to their fellow taxpayers who graciously gave them that money, that that obligation was a lifelong obligation. Interesting. Anyway, now this is Madison again. The proposition now under debate is liable to all the objections to the former one. In other words, the previous debates of doing this, as well as to many others that have been stated against it. From the explanation given by the gentleman from Connecticut, it is evident that this proposition may, in the result, assume the shape of the original one. It may therefore be fairly combated by all those arguments that were brought either against the original proposition or against the very objectionable manner in which the blanks are proposed to be filled up. I am not insensible that an assumption of the state debts is, under certain aspects, a measure not unworthy of a favorable attention. If it had not at least plausible recommendations, I do not think it could have obtained so respectable a patronage here. I am sure it would not have originated in the quarter which proposed it. But, sir, it is a question that must be considered and reconsidered in all its various points of view. And the more it has been investigated, the more objections have multiplied, and the more solid they have appeared. Now, so he's basically given you the ground truth up to this point. What that means is that they're fighting, and the desperation by, what was the guy's name? Sherman's compadre. Mr. Scott. No. It was Mr. Wadsworth. Mr. Wadsworth was the one that basically said, hey, if you guys don't do this, there's going to be a clamor in the northern states against this union. So anyway, as they start going forward, Madison is basically giving you kind of a litmus test or the ground truth of really the sentiments of the majority of the people. Now, I want you to keep this in mind. Do not ever forget this. When you're reading history and you're reading about the rhetoric regarding, you know, the 14th Amendment, when you're reading the rhetoric about, you know, the Constitution and the ratification debates, the squeaky wheel is doing everything it can to stop that. I mean, these people are desperate and they use hyperbole and they, you know, just barrage. And that's why you'll probably notice that there, in most of the ratification debates, they kind of kept it equal because they wanted to ensure that there was equal time. But as often as possible, they would try to get as many anti-federalists to stack up and basically say, this is an outrage. This is terrible. This is an abomination. And, you know, create a overwhelming front to basically make it hard for those who were supporting the Constitution to justify it. And so this was pointed out by Kurt Lash during the 14th Amendment ratification debates in Congress as they were trying to ratify to move it forward to send to the states for ratification. In other words, they were trying to approve it. And he pointed out that even though there was a voluminous objection in the floor of Congress in the two houses, it still passed. So don't think that just because you got all of these great citations, and I say this in regards to this, you know, the anti, you know, convention argument that, you know, that one particular society, wink, wink, uses regarding the Convention of States. They say, you know, that the delegates in the Constitutional Convention, exceeded their commission. They went outside the boundaries of their commission. Therefore, this was a runaway convention. And they say that with a straight face because they have all of these people that basically made those assertions. And as I have told you, when it went down to, do we actually debate this Constitution, or do we actually challenge this because these men exceeded their commission? You have to understand that the principles that these men understood, that it was an inalienable right to alter and or throw away any government that was not serving us. And it was obvious to everybody in those conventions of ratification that the existing Articles of Confederation and that the way the states had protected their little fiefdoms, it was obvious to everybody that the states were the problems, that they had to alter their government or abolish it. And so instead of abolishing it, they altered it into this new government. And it was within their commission. It was within their rights as declared, as defined as an inalienable right. And every man recognized this. But why is it that nobody wants to make that comment or conversation? Because it doesn't support the argument against the Convention of States. So, I mean, you don't want to weaken your argument, right? I mean, you want to constantly build, you want to create such an unbreakable and an immovable and irrefutable argument that, you know, you'll do anything to kind of protect the argument instead of actually trying to do what you should be doing. And the fact of the matter is, and I will say this, I believe that there are most people that are involved in the Convention of States are good patriots. They recognize that we need to do something. The problem is they've been convinced that the action that they need to do is the only action and the only constitutional action because of their illiteracy of what we are doing. So this really goes to even a, you know, a bigger problem. And this is why we need to actually start educating them of why Madison and Jefferson chose not to do an Article 5 convention. But anyway, let me get back. See, I go down these tangents. Let me get back to this assumption argument. Madison again goes, "The arguments used in favor of the measure have been supposed weighty, but sir, I consider them as unsupported. It has been contended that the state debts are in their nature debts of the United States, that they were only from different offices and have borne a different denomination, but that in justice they are the debts of the United States, and that the individual creditors can of right claim payment of the same from the general government." Well, one of the things that I would have injected right here is that these states were sovereign in creating these debts. When the federal government said, you need to do this, that sovereign state assumed that debt. They had to pay that. And Madison goes on and says, "I deny the principle, sir, and I think it is disapproved by the arguments of the gentlemen themselves. If the debts of the particular states be nothing more than debts of the United States under another denomination, and if we are bound to provide for them precisely for the debts of the United States, let gentlemen consider whether they are not bound to view them in this light wherever they may be found. If they are debts of the United States in the hands of individual citizens, for the same reason that the other debts in private hands are debts of the United States, must they not be debts of the United States also when the treasuries of the different states? Will gentlemen say that what are called the state debts ought to be viewed in light when in the hands of citizens? And that this quality forsakes them the moment they are received into state treasury. If they wish to preserve consistency in the reasoning, they must say that the debts are dissimilar in the hands of private citizens, or that they are similar in the hands of the states." And so we're going to get back to this, and we're going to go through this because he's laying out these beautiful arguments. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And this is so important because we've got states that are actually going to be going bankrupt. We'll be back. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic.
We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.